and welcome to Program Notes for your North Carolina Symphony, an exclusive production of the Triangle Radio Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. I'll be reading the program notes for all of the Classical Music Series concerts by the North Carolina Symphony for the remainder of the 2018 season. The program notes I'm reading today are for the performance by the North Carolina Symphony on Tuesday, May 8th at 7:30 p.m. in Memorial Hall, UNC Chapel Hill. Wednesday, May 9th at 7:30 p.m. in the Riverfront Convention Center in New Bern. And Thursday, May 10th at 8 p.m. at Snyder Memorial Baptist Church in Fayetteville. This concert will be conducted by Grant Llewellyn. The featured soloist will be clarinetist Samuel Almaguer. The program on this performance will include the following: the overture to the opera The Marriage of Figaro, Kirschel Listing 492 by Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart; the Clarinet Concerto in A Major, Kirschel Listing 622, also by Mozart; then following the intermission, the symphony will perform Symphony No. 3 in A minor, Opus 56, called The Scottish Symphony by Felix Mendelssohn. Now I'll begin our reading of the symphony notes. First, some information about our featured soloist. A native of San Antonio, Texas, Samuel Almaguer is principal clarinet of the North Carolina Symphony. Previous to his time in North Carolina, Almaguer performed with the Detroit Symphony Orchestra. As an active chamber musician, he has been featured with Incontri Musicali in Spoleto, Italy, and the Cactus Pear Music Festival in San Antonio. Almaguer's performances have been broadcast on WGBH in Boston, on WUNC, North Carolina Public Radio, and on local television stations in Los Angeles. At a young age, he was featured on National Public Radio's From the Top with pianist Christopher O'Reilly. Almaguer is also an avid performer of contemporary music, having been a guest artist with the Boston Symphony Orchestra's Festival of Contemporary Music at Tanglewood Music Center, and Wild Up in Los Angeles, as well as participating in various projects with the North Carolina Symphony. While in school, he was a fellow at both the Tanglewood Music Center and the Music Academy of the West. The first work to be performed by the North Carolina Symphony is the overture to The Marriage of Figaro, Kirschel Listing 492, by Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. Mozart was born January 27, 1756, in Salzburg, Austria. He died December 5, 1791, in Vienna. The work was composed in 1786, and the first performance, May 1, 1786, at the Burgtheater, Vienna, conducted by the composer. Now, here is the overview. In 1781, Mozart set out for Vienna, capital of the Holy Roman Empire and the center of Central European culture, as a freelance musician, a novelty at the time. In spite of early success, especially with his piano concertos and as a pianist, he could never secure a position in court, and his financial situation went from bad to worse. Opera was the most prestigious musical genre in Vienna, and Mozart had the luck to team up with one of the best librettists of all time, Lorenzo da Ponte, who lived from 1749 to 1838. Born in Italy of Jewish parents and converted as a child to Catholicism, da Ponte wrote the librettos for three of Mozart's greatest operas, Don Giovanni, The Marriage of Figaro, and Così fan tutte. Unfortunately, the three da Ponte operas met only with limited success in Vienna. It was only after Mozart's death that their true value was appreciated. The Marriage of Figaro is one of the oldest operas in the standard repertoire and one of the most youthful in spirit. When Pierre de Marchais' Beaumarchais' play, on which the opera is based, was published in 1782, its unflattering portrait of the aristocracy understandably caused an uproar and horrified Louis XVI. Like any scandal, it proved irresistible and must have spread rapidly, because Mozart's opera to Lorenzo da Ponte's libretto was premiered only 4 years later on the cusp of the French Revolution. Now, here's what to listen for. As is customary for most opera overtures of the 18th century, this one contains no music from the opera itself. Nevertheless, the overture captures the spirit of the opera in its opening bars, a sequence of rapid notes on the strings scurrying like whispering conspirators. It is answered by the whole orchestra with festive trumpets. These alternating moods continue throughout the ebullient overture. The instrumentation for the overture is as follows: two flutes, two oboes, two clarinets, two bassoons, two horns, two trumpets, timpani, and strings. Next on the program, the North Carolina Symphony presents the Clarinet Concerto in A Major, Kerschel Listing 622, also by Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. This work was composed in 1791, the first performance October 16, 1791, in Prague. Anton Stadler was the clarinetist. Here is the overview. This extraordinary concerto is Mozart's last completed instrumental piece. It has been, without doubt, the most popular work ever written for the clarinet, and few others have done the instrument more justice. Most of the larger compositions Mozart wrote in the last years of his life were commissions, attempts to raise badly needed cash. The Clarinet Concerto, however, was an exception. Mozart composed it, as well as the Clarinet Quintet, Kerschel 581, for his friend, the celebrated virtuoso Anton Stadler. What began as a pure musical association between composer and performer became a deep friendship, cemented by their involvement with Vienna's Freemasons. They shared one other trait. Neither could hold on to money. Stadler borrowed relentlessly, often from Mozart, of all people. Fortunately for us, the friendship withstood the strain. The clarinet was a relative latecomer to Western music. While there is some evidence that both Antonio Vivaldi and George Frederick Handel employed the instrument occasionally, the clarinet did not come into regular use until the second half of the 18th century and was in continual evolution. While today's young band students learn on an instrument in B-flat, thereby making it the default instrument, there are more varieties of clarinets in shape, size, and key than any other instrument. Until his friendship with Stadler, Mozart had used the instrument sparingly, except in his Harmonie Musique, serenades and partitas for wind ensembles used for outdoor entertainment. But by the late 1780s, he included the instrument in his last three piano concertos, his final symphonies, and all his major operas composed in Vienna. Mozart wrote the concerto in its original form for an instrument of Stadler's invention, an extended-range clarinet, sometimes called a basset clarinet, extending 1/4 lower than the standard clarinet. The autograph manuscript, however, was lost, and only an adaptation for the regular clarinet, made in 1802 by the original publishers, survived. Since the late 1940s, clarinetists have made numerous attempts to reconstruct the original score for the basset clarinet, and instrument makers have attempted to recreate the instrument itself. An increasing number of performers are currently playing the concerto on these extended-range clarinets. Now, here's what to listen for. After the traditional orchestral exposition, the voice of the clarinet is seldom still. There is a masterful interplay between soloist and orchestra, as well as an astounding number of themes, most of them introduced by the soloist. The mood is changeable, at times cheerful, as in the opening theme, at others resigned or even sad. The tone is rich and languid, thanks to Mozart's unusual choice of secondary themes in the minor mode rather than the customary major. The slow second movement is a simple ABA song form, one of Mozart's most poignant, gentle, and introspective utterances. The long, irregular phrases create a feeling of emotional tension. The rondo finale is in a different mood, harking back to the simplicity and charm of music from Mozart's earlier days and reflecting the happy mood of the opera The Magic Flute, which he was composing at the time. Of course, there are ample opportunities for the clarinet to show off, but in no way approaching the level of technical fireworks found a generation later in the concertos for clarinet by Carl Maria von Weber, which really put the instrument through its paces. Stadler premiered the concerto in Prague on October 16, 1791, less than 2 months before the composer's death. The instrumentation for this work is as follows: for solo clarinet, two flutes, two bassoons, two horns, and strings. Then the North Carolina Symphony will take an intermission and return to the stage to perform the Symphony No. 3 in A minor, Opus 56, The Scottish Symphony by Felix Mendelssohn. Mendelssohn was born February 3, 1809 in Hamburg, and he died November 4, 1847 in Leipzig, Germany. This work was composed from 1829 to 1842. The first performance was March 3, 1842, by the Leipzig Gewandhaus Orchestra, conducted by the composer. Now here is the overview. We are all familiar with the romantic stereotype and often the reality of the composer struggling for his daily bread and his artistic survival. Probably the greatest exception to this picture was Felix Mendelssohn, an economically secure composer from a culturally sophisticated and highly supportive family. The Mendelssohn household was a mecca for the intellectual elite of Germany, and the many family visitors fawned over the prodigy and his talented sister Fanny. Fortunately for the development of his rare abilities, his carefully selected teachers were demanding and strict. Mendelssohn's financial security gave him the opportunity to take the grand tour in what was then considered the civilized world, Western Europe, Italy, and Britain. In 1829, he traveled to England and then on to Scotland, where his visit to Fingal's Cave in the Hebrides Islands inspired the Hebrides. It also produced the ideas that became the Scottish Symphony. Started in Italy in 1830, but not finished until 1842, the Scottish Symphony was Mendelssohn's last. The numbering of the five symphonies, reflecting their order, dedicated the symphony to Queen Victoria and Prince Albert, whom he had met and charmed during one of his visits to England. The Queen actually sang with Mendelssohn, accompanying her on the piano. Now here's what to listen for. While the music has an undeniably Scottish flavor, it does not quote any authentic folk melodies, a device that Mendelssohn despised. Writing to his father from Wales, he commented, "Anything but national music. May 10,000 devils take all folklore. A harpist sits in the lobby of every inn of repute playing so-called folk melodies at you. Dreadful, vulgar, fake stuff. And simultaneously a hurdy-gurdy is tooting out melodies. It's enough to drive you crazy." That being said, it's difficult to distinguish Mendelssohn's invented Scottish-style melodies from the kind of musical nationalism that he so despised. Well, beginning with the introduction and the succeeding allegro agitato, the gloomy atmosphere gave rise to the myth that it was somehow inspired by the tragic life of Mary, Queen of Scots. More likely, the symphony reflects the bleak and stormy weather so prevalent in the Scottish highlands, lowlands, and outlying islands. The climax of the first movement is a veritable hurricane, replete with chromatic moaning in the strings. The second movement provides a little sunshine. Its main theme is near to a Scottish folk song with Scotch snap and all, as Mendelssohn could get without actually using one. The third movement comes through as passionate, at times even anguished. Its middle section suggests a horn call summons of doom. Then it's back to the Sturm und Drang, or the storm and drive of the finale, but perhaps with a bow to Beethoven's Ninth Symphony. Mendelssohn finishes the symphony with a shift again to the major mode and a new and optimistic theme to end it. The instrumentation for this work is as follows: two flutes, two oboes, two clarinets, two bassoons, four horns, two trumpets, timpani, and strings. These symphony notes were written and copyrighted in 2018 by Joseph and Elizabeth Kahn. You have been listening to Program Notes for your North Carolina Symphony, an exclusive production of the Triangle Radio Reading Service. I will be reading all of the program notes from the classical music series of the North Carolina Symphony for the remainder of the 2018 season. This program is available on demand as a podcast on the day before each concert series and will remain available for the remainder of the concert season. I'm George Douglas. Thank you for joining me. We sincerely hope that listening to Symphony Notes will enhance your enjoyment of your North Carolina Symphony. Goodbye until next time.